Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station. Broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Monday afternoon, November 16th, 2009, is now 5:01 p.m. Central Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the special broadcast of Liberty Talk Radio. During our live broadcast, we do invite you to call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Email us anytime at comments@libertytalkradio.com. We also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. In his weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on contraryinvestorscafe.com. And folks, things are getting really hot and really heavy. Lastly, I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us here at Liberty Talk Radio for this special afternoon edition of broadcast. We are going to have a special guest. We attempted to have this guest last week, but our phone lines just got so goofy we could not fix them, and we lost them a couple of times, and then we lost them permanently. Hopefully, we will not have this problem this evening, this afternoon, and let's see what happens here. Phil, is that you? Philip, is that you?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
How are you, Joe?
Fine. I'm fine. Thank you so much, and I'm glad that we connected the first time around. It looks like we've corrected our problems. Let's keep our fingers crossed. I have not done any introductions, so what I'll do is I'm going to get very, very lazy, and I'm going to leave the introductions up to you. However you want to do it, it's your mic, okay? You can tell us even how wonderful you are. That's fine, Philip.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. Well, then I can lie as much as I want to, then, right?
As they say, go, girl, go.
Okay. Well, thank you. First of all, thank you very, very, very much for having me on your show, Joe. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. I enjoyed the last show a whole lot, and it was really great to be here. And so it's just it's a privilege and an honor to be on your show and to talk to all the people that are listening in.
Thank you.
I'm a writer. I've written about 10 books. I have 3 books in print presently and a 4th book that's coming out in about a month called The Romantic Struggle. Most people immediately think that's a romance novel. And it is in a way, but not the typical romance novel. It is a book of 2 novels and about 12 short stories. The book is about 400 pages altogether. And the part that's getting the most interest is the title story, The Romantic Struggle, and because it is so timely and it pertains so much to what we are experiencing today in our lives in the United States. So it is a poignant message to everyone who is concerned about being taxed, yet ignored at the same time.
Right.
which our founding fathers called taxation without representation. It's poignantly critical to everyone who is being neutered by political correctness and having their identity robbed from them through political correctness.
Right.
It is critical to everyone who cares about this country and the freedom it affords. And it's critical to everyone who cares about the world in general, because everyone still looks to us as the leaders of freedom. And so that's why this book is so important, and I think that people will benefit and enjoy reading it. I think it'll be a lot of fun to read, too.
I see. Now, I don't think I ever mentioned your last name. It's Philip Hathaway, and the book is The Romantic Struggle. Folks, I apologize. I jumped the gun, answered the phone without introducing my guest, and to that I apologize. Philip, how do you see, more specifically, where we are now, and what do we have to be concerned about?
Well, one of the principal things that we need to be concerned about is the thing that allows us to really live, to be fully human, to be fully alive. Now, this sounds a little, might sound a little surprising or a little odd. And let me, if I may, to back up just a little bit before I get to that irreducible
Sure.
problem.
Sure.
There is a more obvious problem, and let's talk about the most obvious problem first. And then we shall talk about the irreducible problem beneath that obvious problem.
Okay.
The obvious problem is the rule of law, which is adherence to the Constitution and living in a country, in a government, under the auspices of the Constitution. That is the most obvious and critical problem. I should ask our listeners, what kind of government did our founding fathers create? Well, there would be a number of answers, I think. But I feel, as many other people feel, that it was a constitutional aristocracy. It was based on a constitution.
Right.
That is a law. That is the rule of law. It was not based on a king or the whims of a king or some monarch. It was based on law. Therefore, it wasn't built around a personality. It was built around a constitution. And the people who enforced the law, the Constitution, were the somewhat aristocracy of the time. They were landowners, principally, and intelligent, educated men. And I should remind everyone that aristocracy means rule by the best. So these were the brightest and the best men.
Right.
You know, people who were successful, people who had a reputation of being honest. So that's where we began, a constitutional aristocracy that was balanced with democracy. And we started as a republic, which the Constitution guarantees that every state shall be a republic in Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution. Nowhere is the word democracy mentioned in the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence or the Articles of Confederation. The word democracy or any derivative thereof is not mentioned once. So we started as a republic that was a constitutional aristocracy balanced by democracy. But what we are now, or what we pretend to be, is a democracy. and even a hyper-democracy, wherein which everyone can vote. And Joe, it's important to realize this is the first time in human history that a hyper-democracy has existed. Have you thought about that?
No, when you say hyper-democracy, can you explain that to me?
Yes, it's just a democracy where everyone has the right to vote.
Okay.
I mean, of course, there are exceptions. I mean, you have to be 18 years old. You can't be a convicted felon.
Right.
You know, there are some minor exceptions to the rule. But essentially, as long as you're 18 years old and you're a citizen, you can vote.
Right.
So this is the first time in human history that a hyper-democracy, as I call it, I coined that term, by the way, has existed. And it has only been exercised since about 1960, when they started allowing everyone to vote. So that's only been 50 years.
Right.
It's an experiment. It's a tiny experiment in terms of time. So we have gone from a constitutional aristocracy, which is balanced, just simply balanced by democracy, to a hyper-democracy. And all we hear about is democracy.
Right. That's all we hear about on TV.
Right. So that's the biggest problem, is that we're losing the rule of law because the Constitution is being marginalized. It's no longer taught in the schools to any degree at all.
Right, that's correct.
The law enforcement agents and the people who uphold our law are not routinely trained about our constitutional rights. Therefore, if we get arrested and they try to hold us against our will, which is habeas corpus, and we say that's unconstitutional, they'll just laugh at us.
That's correct.
So this is the biggest problem, the most obvious problem that we are facing, is the rule of law.
You know, that's interesting, because we never hear the term rule of law. And the problem that when we use that term, we use it when we discuss investment opportunities overseas. And we'll hear something like, Russia would be a great opportunity for investors if it only initiated a rule of law, of which there is very little. We use it to describe the lack of free movement of people, of free people in other countries, but we never use it to describe our own failings here.
Right.
Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It applies to other people, but not us.
Right.
And that's a psychopath, an individual who drives through traffic and curses at other people who are pulling in front of him as he's pulling in front of other people and cutting them off.
Right.
That's psychopathic.
Right.
And you know, the same applies to a nation who expects everyone else to obey the law but not themselves. That's psychopathic behavior. And they certainly do that. You know, if you lie to the federal government, you go to jail.
Right.
If the federal government lies to you, well, you know, that's just standard operating procedure.
Right. Well, it's accepted. it's amazing today. It seems that people are always looking toward the government for solutions or comfort in solving a problem. When I say comfort, they know the problem won't be solved, but there's some comfort in going to the federal government or some sort of government entity for a solution, when historically the government has never been the solution in anything. They've just changed the rules.
Right.
Sort of George Orwell 1984, you just change a few words here and there and you have a different you've redefined the problem, thus the old problem went away, when nothing at all has changed whatsoever. But we're masters at that, aren't we?
Yeah. And that brings me back to our point. You know, when you ask where we are right now, the rule of law has broken down in this country, and yet we keep going to the government because they give us handouts and they pretend to take care of us. But I'd like to read a little excerpt from my book, if I may. It's very short.
Oh, yes, please
that,
do.
That tells us where we might be going and where we are partially anyway, but right now, but where we might be in just a few years. So I'd like, if you don't mind, I'd like to just read just very briefly.
All right, right before you do that, let me just stop for a second for station identification. Okay, and then we'll take it from there. It's a good break point here at this point. Folks, you're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We are interviewing Philip Hathaway, a prolific author and currently the author of The Romantic Struggle, a dialogue which will kind of surprise you because it is not a romantic novel meant for teenagers, but it's an interesting manner in which he has cleverly, I guess, weaves an analogy with today's current state of affairs. He is now going to read an excerpt from his book. And if you have any questions or comments, please call in 646-652-4620, 646-652-4620. We'd like to thank everyone for joining our special edition of Liberty Talk Radio today. And also, if you're listening to this on a rebroadcast, please send your comments to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Okay, Philip, take it away.
Great. Okay. And I'm just going to read a little excerpt from The Romantic Struggle, which I think kind of gives us the tone and tint of the problem that that the protagonist of the book finds himself within, and it's what we could be heading toward in the not too distant future. So I'll just go ahead and read this. They marched in step past the corpse-gray housing projects, towering in defiance of nature. The color green was absent, for no trees nor a solitary blade of grass lived along this way, and the only similitude of ornamentation was an enormous sign atop the highest housing unit, and it was one word in bold black: androgyny. So here we have people walking in a labor crew to work, and the only thing besides the corpse gray building around them that's completely devoid of nature is one word, and that word is androgyny. And androgyny, of course, means neither male nor female. Sexless, neutered. And that's I feel like that's what has happened to us as a society. Is that we have the state has taken over our lives so completely that they're literally squeezing the life out of us.
Yeah.
And I'll just read one more short sentence here from the book, and I think this is an important little comment in the book. For political correctness destroys the two divine canons of being fully human: romance and passion. So, political correctness, which is the government, you know, the state-sponsored suggestions about how we should live our individual, God-given lives.
Yeah. Would that be considered doublespeak?
Political correctness, you mean?
Yes.
Well, yes. It's. I guess it could be. I haven't thought about that, but the gist of my point is that it destroys romance and passion. And those are the two divine canons of being fully alive, fully human. And it destroys that. And that's where we've been headed since political correctness has been on the scene, and all the ideas about equal rights that have been perverted and have instead just destroyed being fully alive and fully human and romance and passion. So this kind of goes back to the title of the book, The Romantic Struggle. People who are the real romantics are the ones who will fight.
Now, okay.
People who are the real passionate people about life are the ones who will resist and fight.
Right. Okay.
People who really embrace life in its fullness will stand up and fight against this.
Right.
Because they're filled with passion and romance, a romance for life.
Right.
And as the romantics were in the 18th century, you know, they were fully alive.
Right.
And not subservient to some state.
Right.
Ideas about what life should be like. That results in what I just read, you know, these corpse gray, huge, tall corpse gray buildings that line the streets where nothing green grows at all. No grass or trees or anything grows. So the obvious problems that we talked about are the breakdown of law and the marginalizing of the Constitution. But what that really leads to is a sexless, passionlessness society without romance.
Yeah.
Hence the romantic struggle.
It's so interesting the way you weave that, because once you brought me down that road, the whole thing made sense. You know, and when you mentioned the gray buildings, of course, the first thing we think of is the communist, the old communist bloc with the gray multi-story buildings, you know, mile after mile. However, if we look here in the United States, we see the same thing with the state-subsidized housing projects. They look exactly the same. Ours may
exactly.
be red brick, they may be gray brick, but it's the exact same thing. We are duplicating
yeah.
it, and we seem to accept it here as something benevolent by the government, but when we see it there, exact same situation, we say, look at those poor people. Too bad they're
right.
not free. You know, when you talk about the romantic struggle, can you help me with something?
Sure.
Back about 10 years ago or so, there was the World Trade Organization met in Seattle, Washington. There were thousands upon thousands of people who went there and protested, and there is many reasons why they were protesting as there were people. And there was nothing comprehensive, and they interviewed dozens of people, and everyone gave a different reason. But it was all this pent-up frustration. Now, all these people were exactly what you're talking about. They were passionate. They wanted,
right.
you know, they it seemed as if their passions had been blocked or had been suppressed for so long, and they just wanted to get out there and they say, I'm alive, you know, I'm damn mad, I'm not going to take it anymore. Don't know why, but damn it, listen to me. And it almost seemed that way, and I do regret not going to Seattle myself. I don't know why I would have gone, but I would have done the same thing that they did. Do you see, I'm
right.
serious, I'm absolutely serious. I would have gone just because I'm protesting the whole damn, you know, structure that we have. But that would
right.
have been reason number, you know, 1,230,000. Do you see a connection there? Am I talking in the same vein, or did I just take
absolutely.
The trolley off the track?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. You're being human. You're being alive. You're being passionate about something and not letting them just crush your spirit. You're being romantic about life.
Ah.
And that is what they do not, they hate. They do not want us to be alive. They do not want us to be fully human and filled with the spirit of lust for living and fighting. They don't want that.
Oh, that
because they can't control it.
That's right. That
and it frightens them. And they may not even know that consciously. I want to make that clear as well. It may be that these powers that be in the oligarchy who occupies the United States, they may not sit around and say, oh, how can we destroy their passion? We don't want them to be fully alive. We don't want them to be, romantic. We don't want them to be passionate about life and all that kind of stuff. They may not sit around and say that. I doubt that they do. But subconsciously, that's what they're doing.
But they want us to be obedient.
That's what is being materialized in the real world, and it's coming from them. So subconsciously, this is what they want. So I think that's very important.
Yeah. You know, when
Joe, let me just agree with you a second time on what you said. I absolutely agree with you. Your desire to go to Seattle and protest is the romantic struggle.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure I was on the same page with you. It seems that today with so many people, if you do have a point of view and you are passionate about it, and you may even be correct and not even radical about it, people seem to fend you off. They seem to try to protect themselves from that. They feel like they're going to become infected and they would prefer not to be in your presence. It's so much better if we just talk about the weather and when we mowed our grass, and Johnny's doing very well in school, thank you. And the conversation dies there. As my wife has said for years, decades, we have lost the ability to converse.
Right. Oh, yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, we've gained the ability to eat TV dinners and watch TV.
Right.
and to be satisfied with that.
we seem to be, George Bush hit the nail on the head right after the terrorists went into the World Trade Center, et cetera. He said, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. Just go shopping. I'll handle it.
Right.
Right. I mean, basically, that's what he said. He said, go shopping. And he said, don't worry about it. Daddy will take care of everything, sweetheart. Don't worry about a thing. And to me, that was a turning point in our society when we accepted that. I recall when I was a very, very young boy, lived in East Harlem, New York, in a fully integrated neighborhood, by the way, and we all got along, surprisingly, without the government at the time. And I was, 6 years old or something like that. And I went to there was a little candy store. And these candy stores were small. I mean, they weren't any wider than maybe 12 feet wide and very deep. It's in, they're in Harlem, you know how the streets are there. You've seen pictures of them. And I walked in and I bought something and I can't remember what it was, but it was made out of plastic or something, and I said, hey, how come this is not made out of metal anymore? It's a little toy thing, And I never forgot what the store owner said. I mean, as if he said it yesterday. He said, we're fighting a new war in Korea, In other words, we had to sacrifice because we so elected to fight a war halfway around the world. Well, that made sense. And we went from that, and that's the first thing I thought about when George Bush said, go shopping. In other words, you're going to get whatever you want. We'll take care of it. We don't have to sacrifice anymore. And I wonder how we did that, how we went from a society that had to sacrifice if we had to go to war. And I did not agree with the war in Korea at all. I thought that was that was second only to Vietnam and Iraq. Today, we can live our lives as if there's nothing going on, and yet we're fighting, we have two occupations right now, military occupations, and we have 800 bases around the world, and basically we're fighting every single day. And yet we as a nation accept that. Like, that's normal, so, we'll watch Dancing with the Stars. The important things we will leave with the President of the United States and the Congress. Because that's above us. And I think we've lost our way. I'm sorry for the diatribe.
Yes.
but I hope.
No. That's part of your romantic struggle.
And now I want to take a second just for station identification again. Boy, time is flying. It's 5:30 already. Folks, my name is Joe Christie, and I'm your host of Liberty Talk Radio. You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. We do wish you would call in. Our call-in number is 646-652-4620. We have with us as our guest Philip Hathaway, author of The Romantic Struggle, and That Ain't No Love Novel. It is about it's an analogy, drawing an analogy very cleverly with the current state of affairs. And Philip is giving us his perspective of our national dilemma. Please call in 646-652-4620. Now, we're going to have this on a rebroadcast and also on our archives. If you are listening later, not live, you can always send us comments to our email, rather, comments@libertytalkradio.com. And we'd love to hear from you. Okay, Philip. Now, you asked me to entitle the program The Occupation of the United States. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Sure. Well, what we've encountered here is a fifth column. A nation within a nation. And a fifth column is just, you're supposed to be marching in four columns when you're in the military. So a fifth column is another group that's not supposed to be there. So we have a fifth column, a nation within a nation, that has occupied our country. I believe very firmly that they have occupied it since 1865, and that is when the Hamiltonians, who were following the ideas of Alexander Hamilton, finally decided to win the argument by brute force against the Jeffersonians, those who followed Thomas Jefferson.
Right.
They couldn't make an enough logical argument, I suppose, that the Hamiltonian way of life or government should prevail, and that was to centralize the power in Washington, D.C., rather than allowing the states to be sovereign and the individuals who live there to be sovereign. They wanted to centralize the power in Washington, D.C., and so the Civil War was fought for that very reason, not to free the slaves.
Right. I agree.
So our country has been occupied since that time by an alien mentality, an alien philosophy, an alien government, to be sure. And that is who occupies us presently. They destroyed the South, particularly because the South was the aristocracy.
I see.
And they hate the aristocracy because the aristocracy is their competition.
Right.
And so just like a mafia boss would order their competition to be murdered, they ordered the destruction of the aristocracy. So anything that smacks of aristocracy, they detest.
Right.
And I'm speaking about the oligarchy, the fifth column, the nation within a nation that runs our country from Washington, D.C. So we've been occupied. We don't get a voice in anything anymore, it doesn't seem like, too much the greatest example, I think, Joe, is House Resolution 1207, which is Ron Paul's bill to audit the Fed. They had 309 co-sponsors for that bill out of the 435 congressional members. They had 309 co-sponsors, not people that said they were going to vote for it, but people that were co-sponsoring the bill.
Yeah.
One-third of the Senate co-sponsored the bill. And Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and Obama won't let it go to the floor for a vote. And I mean, that's against, they're not listening to the people. They're not even pretending to be a democracy any longer.
Well, why don't the news media, why doesn't the news media pick that up and blast it like Edward R. Murrow used to do? I mean,
the reason is this. For those listeners who have played chess, let's draw an analogy to the pieces on a chess set. The king is the oligarchy.
Right.
The queen is the media who serves the oligarchy. The king, of course, is the most important piece on the chess set. The queen is the second most important, and she has tremendous power.
Right.
But so the king could be compared to the oligarchy. But the queen is the media. And the media is there to protect the oligarchy, just as the queen is there to protect her king.
She
has great power. So that's why. I mean, the media, it's all a snow job, to put it bluntly.
Yeah.
So that's where we find ourselves. Now, if I may, I'd like to go back to the idea of romance and passion that we talked about.
Right.
If we are purely romantic and passionate, that is deficient. That is deficient. It's not good enough. You know, we must also be rational. And that's why I came up with the philosophy of rational romanticism. And it's just like the Athenians in ancient Greece. They achieved more than any other people have achieved, and they're our prototype in so many different ways, in architecture, in art, in language, in literature, in mathematics, because they were passionate and intelligent. If they had been passionate, they would have just been savages. If they were just intelligent, they would have been destroyed by their enemies.
Right.
Certainly by the Spartans or by Darius, who led the Persians and invaded their country. So they were so magnificent because of the Greek miracle occurred because of passion and intelligence. And that is why it's so important for us not only to be romantic and passionate, as we discussed a few minutes ago, but also to be rational.
Right.
And I think the greatest example, our hero of rationalism, is the John Galt of our time. John Galt, by the way, for those who don't know, is the protagonist of Atlas Shrugged.
Right.
And our John Galt is Ron Paul.
Right.
And I should hasten to add that I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I like Ron Paul just because he makes sense, because he's rational.
Right.
So, you know.
And he's passionate about it.
That's how. I'm sorry?
And he's passionate.
Yes. Yes.
Boy, he's an excellent example.
Yes. Yes, he is.
And he takes a tremendous amount of criticism, too.
Oh, unbelievable. And he's withstood that criticism for 30 years. Or longer. He got into, actually, you know, it's been longer than that, because he got into politics when Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard back in 1971. Mm. So it's been 38 years.
Right. Phil, how do we get where we are from where we are to where we want to go? I guess to where we want to go from where we are now, I guess, is the proper way of saying it. But there seems to be such a gulf between the two. There seems to be the large
right.
proponent of people who
right.
Who are too comfortable, saying that, you know, don't rock the boat. You know, it'll be okay. We've been through this before. You know, don't be a kook. Whatever. I mean, you say anything, you're a kook. Anything at all.
Right.
And you go from there to the cynic who wants to hide out, you know, in the hills and kill anybody who comes within, you know, 500 feet of his property. You know, what happened, that middle ground, you know, the people who should be passionate about life and about everything that's dear to them, what happened to this population? And how, it, since it's gone, it seems to be gone, how do we go from becoming slaves to political parties, which everyone in my subdivision where I live, and I have a typical middle-class subdivision, and they're all married to either the Democrat or Republican Party, and they'll argue to death on it, but they neither make any sense. But how do you get them from, you know, being passionate about, in fact, they are passionate. They're passionate about what's going on in government. They think it's wonderful. I mean, they'll defend it. How do we bridge that?
Well, we with those people, we don't. But those people will always be around, and who are, you know, the status quo, and they really don't care one way or the other. We only need 5 or 10% who know this, that we can win. That's all we need. When I was in the Army, and by the way, I'd like to remind all those bureaucrats and the communists in Washington, D.C., that I took an oath with my hand on the Bible and my right hand raised and swore to defend the Constitution if it meant giving my life to do it. And I haven't renounced that oath, by the way. So I'd like to make that public announcement.
Yeah, do they still require that?
It only takes this. When I was taught in the Army, they taught us, look, you could be in severe situations where you are struggling to survive. And the first thing you need to know is this, is if you have the will to survive, you will be able to live and survive. Mm. If you lose that, forget it. As long as you have the will to survive, you'll find a way to win and fight until you win.
Right.
And so that's the most important thing, is that people realize that we can win, we will win, and we can win if we simply understand that we have the ability to do it, as long as we have the will to win. And
right.
I'm positive of this, Joe, that 5 to 10% of the population in this country have the will to win and the will to survive.
And do you think that 5 or 10% of the population,
that's what will make the difference?
You think 5 or 10% of the population is willing to passionately step forward to make that change? You think there are that many people, in your opinion?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I do. I think, I'll just say, hey, let's just say that there are 3%. That's enough. You know, 3-5%, that's enough. That's enough. That's all it takes. And something else too, Joe, let me just say something to help people realize that I'm dealing with reality here when I say that we can win this, because the odds are remarkable. I understand that Mao Zedong murdered 45 million of his own people in the name of communism because they disagreed with him. I understand that Trotsky and Stalin murdered 25, 30 million of their people purely from ideology and communism. So why can't they do that here? They can, right? Well, sure. Yes, they can. But in China, where Mao Zedong oppressed these people and murdered so many people, and in Russia, they didn't have weapons. They didn't have guns.
Right.
We're a heavily armed society.
Right.
You know? And look, they're going to have to scratch their heads pretty hard before they think about that, before they think about taking us over that way.
Yeah, and that's probably the impetus behind slowly but surely placing more and more restrictions on guns. on firearms, right, and whatever. There's always got to be a reason for it, and it's never dramatic. It's always this slow progression that we go through that eventually will see us totally unarmed. And I have a poster in my studio. It says, "Free people own guns, slaves don't." And if people can only remind themselves of that, that slaves never own guns. If they owned guns, they wouldn't be slaves.
That's right.
But people cannot, they don't equate, Philip. They do not equate slavery here in the United States. They say that could only occur outside of the walls of our walls, because here we're safe. It's a democracy, of course, and we have a government that'll protect us, and we're good, and we're all the bombings that we do around the world and all the people we kill are all for their own good. I mean, this is the mentality. It drives me nuts. I also agree that we do have a 5% and maybe 10% of the people who would be passionate. And the question is that who will be, or how will this 5 or 10% coalesce? What would be the spark to move us forward? And before you answer that, let me pause for station identification. Once again, folks, you're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We're pleased to have as our guest Philip Hathaway, author of The Romantic Struggle. And before you think this is a little love story of some teenagers, he actually cleverly weaves the analogy with our current state of affairs and gives us our perspective of the national dilemma. So, please call in 646-652-4620, 646-652-4620. Those of you who are listening, we thank you for listening in on the special edition of Liberty Talk Radio. If you're listening in on a rebroadcast or from our archives, please send us your comments to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Thank you. All right, Phil. My question still stands.
How will this coalesce?
Yes, what's going to be the driving force
for that? We're setting the stage for that, and that's an excellent question. How will it coalesce? We're setting the stage for that by the effort of Ron Paul to pass House Resolution 1207, which is the bill to audit the Fed. Now, we have overwhelming support for that. If it went to the floor right now, if it was allowed to go to the floor by Nancy Reagan and Pelosi, it would pass immediately.
Right.
But because it's being resisted unlawfully, we're setting the stage for something to happen.
Let me interrupt you right here. Excuse me. If we had 309 sponsors, and Obama just said, "To hell with you, you mean nothing. You're nothing. I make the decisions around here. I'm going to trash this." Where are the 309 congressmen? Why aren't they, all 309, leading some sort of protest in Washington? I mean, going absolutely nuts, being interviewed on every TV station, every radio station, asking everyone with blood flowing in their veins to immediately pick up your pitchfork and join me and get these rascals the hell out of Washington.
And this is where they're, to answer your question specifically, you said, where are they? They are between the voter and Washington, D.C. That's where they hide. In other words, they are trying to please the voter, which is the only one they're supposed to please, but they're illegally trying to also please the Obama administration and the political status quo. So they say one thing to their constituents, and then they behave a different way when they're in Washington, D.C. So even though they're co-sponsors, a lot of those co-sponsors would be just as happy to let this bill die so they won't have to face the confrontation that they would face in Washington, D.C. if it passed.
But blame somebody else.
So beg your pardon?
They're blaming somebody else. They always can blame someone else. They voted for it, you know, but, you know, what more could I do? I think it's about time that these politicians took to the streets. I'd love to see one of the politicians start a march right in Washington, D.C., saying, I've had it. That's it. We're taking to the streets. Pick up your pitchfork. Follow me. You know, I mean, something.
But remember this. In this game of chess, of which, by the way, Ron Paul is a master chess player. In this game of chess, the queen is the media. So if they did say that, who would listen to them? You know, if the radio program, if the radio stations and the TV stations and the newspapers and the magazines ignore it, we have no idea. There could be 10 congressmen doing that right now, all across the country. And if they were ignored, we'd never know about it.
They may
be doing it 2 miles from here.
Right.
And we would never know about it.
Well, you know, people.
So that's the problem. The media is the crown jewel of our struggle. The crown jewel of our struggle. With your permission, I'd like to read one more very short little piece from the Romantic Struggle, if time allows for that.
Yeah, please do. We have about 6 more minutes.
Okay. I read just a minute ago about how the labor crew was marching off to their place of duty, and in what America might be like in the near future. When they get to their factory, there's a huge sign, inside the factory, and the sign says this, and I'll read just an excerpt from it after I read what the sign says. The sign says, "Work to pay your debt." But the debt was incurred by the international bankers who robbed all the money from the national treasury. When that was gone, they borrowed trillions of dollars from other countries and stole that as well. They then enslaved the citizens to repay their colossal theft.
Well, that's not a story. That's exactly what's going on.
Exactly.
Am I remiss at all on that?
Yeah. That's why I want to encourage people to read The Romantic Struggle when it comes out, and I think it will be a meaningful thing. Perhaps it will be something that will help coalesce the revolution and our path back to freedom.
Yeah. You know, anarchy gets a bum rap. I read an interesting article saying that we're all anarchists. Basically, we want to be left alone. We want to govern our own lives. You know, we don't want to be told what to do. We don't want to be restricted and regulated. And basically, that's anarchy. Now, anarchy doesn't mean that you... And as soon as someone says anarchy, they say, oh, you want to go on the street killing people, breaking windows? You know, they have this image. Well, no, why can't you be an anarchist and be home with your family and leave everyone alone? You know, they don't see that end of it. And really, they say, if you really took a survey and listed all the precepts of anarchy, most people would vote right down the line as a party ticket. And they would not know that they were doing it.
Right.
And I think we have to instill that in people. Say, it's okay to be an anarchist. That doesn't mean you're going to go burning buildings down and killing people in Washington. That means you just want to be left alone. You don't want to be regulated by some bozo in Washington. Some clown over there who has an ulterior
motive.
And
I think you agree with me on this, Joe, is the very last thing, the very, very last thing we want is an armed struggle.
Right, absolutely.
I don't want that.
Right.
I didn't write The Romantic Struggle to try to spark such a thing. That would be a tragedy. Look, that means people going without food.
Right.
That means people going without water and medicine and being cold and, you know, dying and suffering. I don't want that in this country. But I do want the law to be upheld. And that's, we want to be you know, we want to be revolutionists within the law. Let's
right.
put it that way.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, that's you can be. I mean, within the rule of law, you
Absolutely.
Can be an anarchist. But yet, if you know, it's like saying a person's an atheist. Oh, the person's obviously a bad person, kills everybody he sees. If there's an old lady down the block, you know, he's going to kill her with cold blood, steal a you know, where they get this image from, you know? Just because people
right,
don't
right.
believe what they believe in or are tagged a certain way, it drives me nuts. But I think
and,
we need
and
to be more...
We're not... We don't want to overthrow... I don't want to overthrow the government in any way. I want to restore...
Right, good point.
To restore
right.
the government under the auspices of the Constitution.
Right.
And the Declaration of Independence and the Articles of Confederation.
Right.
So I'm not interested in overthrowing government or any other government in the world,
right.
especially ours.
We have 2 minutes left. In the 2 minutes, where do you see, give me your projection of what's going to happen. I mean, and you can sort of play all-knowing, you know, if you want, that's fine. I mean, this is we're just playing a game here. Now we have to.
Well, it's sure. It's just spontaneous. Well, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I think that Ron Paul's effort in the bill to audit the Fed has moved us into a position where we have fewer options now, and that can be a good thing because we've exercised that option and it's been illegally. Ignored. So I think that there could be something that sparks some kind of rallying. I honestly don't know how to answer that question, Joe. I don't know how it's going to work. Obama has the ability to overtake the internet and shut it down. A bill was introduced to allow him to do that. I don't think it's passed yet. But you know, I really don't know how it's going to unfold. Somehow we must, you know, enliven the people and give them the belief and give them the courage that, hey, we're the ones in charge here, and we can win this thing and take our country back.
You know, I'm going to predict that it's going to be a financial anomaly that will spark
right.
most people. And when I say
yes.
a financial anomaly, don't even ask me to describe what that means. It just sounds good.
Right.
But it's going to hit people right. in the pocketbook, and it's going to be a little bit more than maybe 12% unemployment. It'll be something where all of a sudden people wake up, and either their 401k plans have been trashed or something, you know, or the currency has to be devalued to pay the tremendous debt or something like that. And people knew they weren't doing too well anyway, but now they're going to be impoverished. They're going to say, you know, what do I have to lose? You know, I can't even pay the stupid rent anymore. And that's going to be it. I mean, that's... But the probability of that happening is low. Anyway, we only have a minute left. Let me give you that minute to please tell us how we get your book, a little bit about your website, if you have one, and how people can contact you.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. The book is The Romantic Struggle. It's published by Hardcastle Publishing. You can get The Romantic Struggle. You can purchase The Romantic Struggle at Amazon.com. I think everybody just about is on the internet now and knows about Amazon.com. So go to Amazon.com and look for The Romantic Struggle. You can purchase it there. And if you'd like, please feel free to visit my website. I invite everyone to visit my website at Philip Hathaway. That's Philip with two L's. PhilipHathaway.com. And would love to have you come. You can contact me through my website, and I always answer all my emails.
Okay, Phil. We're running out of time. We only have a few seconds left. I want to thank you so much for being on our show. It's been a wonderful interview, and let's plan to do this again in the future, okay?
I'd love to. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you, Phil. Bye-bye now. Wow, that was an interesting interview. That was fascinating. That was fascinating. Folks, this is going to be a tough one, probably the toughest one, the problem we've ever faced in America. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for the financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control your ride and every move. Ron Paul has a sign at his desk that says, "Don't steal." The government hates competition. Until next time, it'll be Thursday morning at 6:30 a.m. is our next live broadcast, this coming Thursday morning. You know, with that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.